on air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. The Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And coming up today, the hard work in preparation for the Taste of Tasmania.
I've been cleaning 2,000 scallop shells, so I've been smelling and I've been scrubbing for hours and hours, so there's definitely a lot of hard work that goes in, not just us as stallholders, but also our wonderful suppliers and producers as well.
And the Inner City Distillery with a bit of history to tell.
The building was built in 1874 by Captain James Bailey, and he was a whale merchant and a shipbuilder, biggest in the Southern Hemisphere back in the 1800s. Where we currently stand in our distillery, we should be the artillery room. So the cannonballs for the boats used to be pushed downstairs underneath the distillery in a tunnel straight to the boats.
Yeah, we'll go inside the historic distillery at Battery Point on this Christmas Eve where there are stories galore from the past. G'day, Tony Briscoe, wishing you and your family all the best for Christmas and a prosperous 2026. Tomorrow's the day we find out who's been naughty or nice. Hope Santa is kind to your wishes. We also look at the hard work that goes into the preparations for the Taste Festival with a stallholder juggling scallops and strawberries. Imagine having 2,000 scallop shells sitting there waiting to be cleaned. In a moment, we'll look at the theft of a trophy which is dear to the hearts of Tasmanian and Australian superfine wool growers from the Midlands. We're on the hunt for that trophy. And how do you like your prawns? Peeled for you, or do you like to do it yourself? We'll find out more later on in the program. As usual, a check on the weather, and around about 10 minutes from now, strong winds hitting parts of the state and severe weather warning for those parts. Details coming up. And you can wish someone a happy Christmas via the text line if you wish, 0438 922 936, that number. Well, police are calling for public assistance in their investigations into the theft of a unique trophy dear to the hearts of Tasmanian superfine wool growers. The Ermenegildo Zegna Perpetual Trophy was stolen from the Tasmanian Wool Centre Museum at Ross earlier this month, while on loan from the Queen Victoria Museum and Art Gallery. The trophy was presented to the best superfine wool grower from 1963 until 2008 and has been won a number of times by Tasmanian wool growers. I spoke to Jessica Newton, the manager of the Tasmanian Wool Centre, earlier today to find out more about the significance of the trophy.
Unfortunately, there was a break-in and someone's gone away with our perpetual Zegna trophy.
Now, this is a very important trophy for superfine wool growers in Tasmania, isn't it?
It is, and further wide as well throughout Australia. But, yeah, definitely its heart lies in Tasmania and it has a beautiful history here. So it's very sad that it's missing at the moment.
Tell us that history of the trophy. Dates back to the 1960s?
Yeah, 1963. The award was founded to encourage further improvement in the quality of superfine wool. And it has a beautiful history with Campbelltown Show, which we know is one of the oldest and finest shows in the area, and I am a bit biased. So it was awarded there yearly, and it really is a great award to receive, and I think that anybody who receives it has a lot of pride in it too. So the fact that it's gone missing as well is sad again.
And there's quite a few Tasmanian wool growers over the year that have received that award, isn't there?
Yeah. From my understanding, it's very much centred in Tasmania. There's a couple of New South Wales and Victorian people that get in the mix, but Tassie's generally in the top five whenever it's awarded.
And designed locally too.
Yes, Stephen Walker, a sculptor, and he has since passed away as well. So that's another reason why it's irreplaceable, I guess, too. Yeah.
Can you tell us about the design of the trophy, what it looks like? And I believe it was in a specially designed box.
Yes, a gorgeous wooden case. It was beautifully lined with woolen fabric, of course. It features a golden ram at the top, just beautiful gold filigree. And the rest, I believe, is platinum and sterling silver. And it's just such a unique shape, and it just sort of draws lots of influence from the environment and that sort of thing. But some people also related a bit to a musical instrument. It's got a bit of a lyre sort of look about it. So it really is quite unique.
And obviously you don't want to see it destroyed.
No. We want it back, definitely. Yeah, we would love it for it to come back to us. Destroyed would be absolutely heartbreaking.
Now, the company itself, Zegna, the wool company, can you tell us much about that?
Italian-based, Count Zegna, and they've had a relationship with Australian wool going since about the early 1900s, sourcing their wool, and they are a really beautiful high-end fashion company. They had just been out to visit and they had some shirts with them, and it was like nothing I've ever felt before. It was almost like butter melting on your fingers, such soft and beautiful garments.
So the symbol for the trophy is the best of the best in wool.
Yes.
While I've got you there, are you going to be busy over the Christmas period?
We hope so. We've had a beautiful lead up to Christmas. We're getting ready because January is usually quite a busy season. We're very tourist-based here, so lots of people coming through the beautiful town of Ross and stopping in to see us as well. So, yeah, we're ready.
And what can they see at the Wool Centre?
Oh, lots of beautiful things. We've got a beautiful tapestry, the Canticle, on the wall, Coburn, which is amazing. We've also got lots of history about the female factory that's here in town as well. And Ross has a really strong military history, so if anybody's interested in that, they can pop in and learn more about that as well. But in our shop, we've got beautiful woolen garments too. So we don't have any Zegna pieces, but we've got some beautiful, lovely Australian brands and some locally made items too.
And Jessica, I suppose you're appealing for public help. What should the public do?
They should call Crime Stoppers or get in touch with the Tasmanian Police if they have any idea as to the whereabouts of this item or anybody is involved. That would be amazing.
I suppose the best Christmas gift would be to have it returned.
Oh, an absolute miracle. It would be gorgeous.
Well, you and your staff and your families have a lovely Christmas, and hopefully we can find that trophy and get it back to where it should be.
Thank you, Tony. Fingers crossed, and same to you.
Yeah, Jessica Newton, the manager of the Tasmanian Wool Centre Museum at Ross, on the theft of the Zegna trophy. And anyone with any information on the whereabouts of the trophy is asked to contact Northern CIB on 131444 or via the Crime Stoppers website. Well, cherries have been in very short supply this year because of the weather, but a Northwest Orchard manager has managed to harvest a few tons over the last couple of days, opening for the public sales for the first time yesterday, just in time for Christmas. Sprayton Fresh co-director Jordan Distel told Meg Ferguson the lineup outside their cherry shop that morning was the biggest he'd ever seen.
This year's season has been quite late. We're about 2 weeks behind schedule. Not that there is a schedule with farming, but, two weeks behind where we'd like to be in terms of capturing that that pre-Christmas local sales, yeah.
What does that mean for people who are hunting for cherries for Christmas?
Unfortunately, there's not as many available as we would have liked. There is a little bit down south, but up here it's just a bit of a waiting game. We've got a couple of ton ready to go, and that's working well in our shop. But unfortunately for markets and other people we supplied, we're a little bit behind, yeah.
So normally you would have started a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. Yeah, so ideally we would have been, selling a lot of our fruit to local IGAs, grocers, and also to the mainland, to Sydney and Melbourne, Victoria. So, we're not doing that yet, which is a bit of a shame, but it'll all come to a rush of work here soon, that's for sure.
What does that mean for your workers too? They normally be on picking?
Luckily, our farm, we do have apples as well. So working on thinning the apple orchards is a very important part. And there is always work to be done in terms of growing, making sure everything's been happening right. So irrigation and checks and measures across the orchard, yeah.
Lots of whippersnippering and...
Yeah. Yeah, there's always work to be done, that's for sure.
What happens with Chinese New Year? So you might have more cherries this year than you normally do for that time.
Yeah, so the crop's looking good. Everything's everything's going as it should, but just with that cold weather, it just hasn't ripened. So all the cherries are looking to be good size, a good volume and good quality as always, but it's just Mother Nature with that cold climate and cold weather, it just hasn't really worked its magic this year.
Is that some sort of advantage to you and other cherry growers around? You can get a pretty good price they're willing to pay good prices in Asia, so having a little bit more this year to sell over there?
Yeah, definitely. If we can hold on and really make the most of the Lunar New Year, then definitely it'll reverse things around and hopefully make the season a lot better. And traditionally, that pre-Christmas Tasmanian cherries is really helpful too. Like the local community and everyone that supports us is, yeah, much appreciated and definitely gets us across the line, yeah. Today was our first day opening up the sales, and it just amazing to see how many people just queuing up along the driveway here at our farm. The support's there, that's for sure. And they're here until they sell out before the new year. Yep.
Is that more than normal, you would say, because it hasn't been available?
I think people have been pretty waiting. So when we do have that week pre-Christmas of being open, it's steady. It's always steady, but it's absolutely bonkers at the moment.
Bonkers, what a great way to describe it. Sprayton Fresh co-director Jordan Distill there talking to Meg Ferguson. In a very windy cherry orchard, we love our cherries. We love hearing about the latest on the weather. Ellie Matthews joins us from the Bureau. G'day, Ellie.
Good afternoon, Tony. How are you?
Good, thank you. Merry Christmas.
And to you too. Happy New Year as well, getting in there early.
Yeah. 2026, eh? It's almost with us. Have you got your cherries and your stuff ready for Christmas?
Well, my Christmas is actually going to be a little bit delayed, so I'm going to miss the crowds and get mine afterwards, given that my Christmas Day will be on the 27th this year.
Okay. Working.
Someone has to work on Christmas Day,
oh,
don't they?
Well, have a lovely one anyway.
That I will. Thank you, Tony.
Now, 2 mils in the gauge at the ABC Hobart studios at midday today.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit more than what the Hobart City gauge has had. It's had a millimetre to around about now since 9 a.m. this morning. But during the last 24 hours or so, with a cold front that has cleared over the state, we have seen showers mostly about the western south, with a few escaping through to more eastern parts of the state. So we have seen with about 15 to 30 millimetres through gauges to 9 a.m. this morning through the west. The highest we have seen is at Mount Bob in the far south, getting up to 40 millimetres, even with some snow above about 1,300 metres being observed this morning. Otherwise, 5 to 10 millimetres about the Huon and lesser 5 millimetres about the southeast and southern Midlands. It was up to a millimetre in the northeast that we did see to 9 a.m. this morning. But since 9 a.m, like I said, millimetre for Hobart, up to 5 or 6 millimetres about broad parts of the west. But otherwise, any other showers that have pushed into more eastern parts of the state haven't amounted to very much in the gauges. But what these showers are bringing, along with just the broad conditions, it's quite windy out there right the way across the state. So we are seeing wind gusts upwards of 70 to 80 kilometres per hour broadly across the state, with the possibility that we could see gusts in the coming hours reaching 100 kilometres per hour across parts of southern, central and northeastern Tasmania. So we do have a severe weather warning current for damaging winds of 100 kilometres per hour through those parts possible, particularly with any shower activity that we do see moving through. So to mention some of our peak gusts we have already seen, it's mostly been about elevated or exposed locations, but Mat Cycle Island has gotten up to 122 kilometres per hour earlier this morning, 109 on top of Kunani, Mount Wellington. There's a couple of other ones of note. Maria Island and Flinders Island have both gotten to 83 kilometres per hour. So quite gusty out there. Does also bring me to the next part of today's forecast, particularly for Flinders Island. So we have seen elevated fire danger ratings, particularly with these windy conditions right the way across eastern Tasmania, even peaking at extreme for Flinders Island. So these gusty conditions aren't just cool and gusty, they're also elevating those fire danger ratings. So there's plenty about today's forecast. But once we get into later this evening, we are expecting to see the strongest of these winds easing back for the overnight period and into Christmas morning. We will see the winds gradually having eased back to gusts of only 60 to 80 kilometres per hour, so a little bit less than what we are seeing today. The other part of the forecast is also this cooler weather. Feels quite strange to be talking about fire dangers whilst also talking about snow, but that is Tasmania during the summer. So we are expecting snow down to around about 700 metres, particularly about the south during the overnight period tonight. So there could be the chance that those in Hobart could wake up to a very light dusting of snow on top of the mountain for Christmas morning, Tony.
And for Christmas Day, you say it's going to be cool.
Yeah, we're looking at a cooler Christmas day than usual, so we're only looking at temperatures reaching into the mid to high teens at most. There'll also be quite cool, gusty southwesterly winds over much of the state, so expecting that wind chill to also feel that little bit cooler. So looking like Christmas tomorrow, quite a cool one. Might be in favour for those who do enjoy a hot Christmas lunch or dinner.
You're right. Now, Boxing Day, what's it going to do?
Yeah, look, into Boxing Day, we've still got that high-pressure ridge that's sitting to the south of the Bight that will continue dominating the weather over Tasmania. So we're continuing with the southwesterly flow. It's going to ease back a bit further, but still continuing to see those cooler temperatures into Boxing Day. It's by the time we get to the weekend and further into the new week that we start to see the high moving out into the east of Tasmania, into the Tasman Sea. And we'll start to see a slow increase in the temperatures with the potential that by the time we get to Sunday or Monday, we might finally be reaching up into those summer mid to high 20 degree maximum temperatures, Tony.
Yeah, so it's all over the shop, isn't it, at the moment?
Certainly does feel like it.
It does. Warnings. Now, you mentioned the severe weather warning. Is that for most of the state or just practically most of the state?
Practically most of the state is within that severe weather warning area. So broadly parts of the west, central, southeastern areas, as well as parts of the northeast and Flinders Island. Does also then, another warning I did mention earlier, the fire weather warning for the Furneaux Islands. There is also, given this snow down to lower lying areas for this time of year, a bushwalker's weather alert is current for this evening. And then continuing on, a sheep graziers warning for the upper Derwent Valley, Midlands and southeast forecast districts for today and tomorrow. Coastal waters, there is gale warnings extending across most waters except the far northwest and upper east coast, and gale warnings for the Storm Bay and the Channel. Otherwise, all other waters, including the inland lakes, do have strong wind warnings current for them. So it's quite windy out there, Tony.
Yeah, I did notice the areas like Hobart weren't included earlier today, but they are now included in that severe weather warning.
Yeah, we have gone and extended that area, particularly with some of the showers that we did see pushing into parts of the far south. Those showers do sometimes be the mechanism for bringing those gustier wind conditions. So particularly when we see showers moving over Hobart into this afternoon, we could see that being where we see the gustiest of winds.
Okay, Ellie, now the coastal waters and swell. What's happening out there?
Yeah, so quite windy. We've got westerly winds of 25 to 35 knots. That is reaching up to 40 knots about the south of the state. The winds do start to tend more southwesterly into this afternoon. Now, by the time we get into Thursday, we're just expecting these southwesterly winds to have eased back to about 20 to 30 knots, although they will continue to reach 35 knots about the southeast during the morning tomorrow. With the swells about the west and south, we've got a west to southwesterly of 5 to 6 metres today. That does start to decay back to 3 to 5 metres tomorrow, whilst through Bass Strait, a westerly of 1 to 2 metres continues through today and tomorrow, whilst out in the east, a southwesterly of 1 to 2 metres, Tony.
And the wave riders with the max wave heights,
yeah,
if you can.
Yeah, of course I can get those. So Cape Sorel is currently sitting at a maximum wave height of, 7.5 metres. It's significant wave height, about 5.5 metres from that westerly direction. Period on that one is up around 14 seconds there as well, whilst Maria Island's currently 1.5 metre significant wave height, reaching up to a 2.2 maximum, Tony.
And Ellie, I know you love your cricket. You would have taken a sneak peek at what the weather in Melbourne is doing on Boxing Day, wouldn't you?
I wish I could say that I had, but I didn't actually have to look at it. But from what I'm gauging on it, for Friday there is a chance of a possible shower, but otherwise it's a cooler start to the Boxing Day test, only a forecast maximum of 17 degrees for Melbourne.
Okay. Ellie, have a happy Christmas and thank you.
You too. Merry Christmas, Tony.
Ellie Matthews from the Bureau with the information for you coming up in just a moment. We'll talk about squid.
Hello, Lucy Braden from The Drive Team, wishing you and your family a Merry Christmas. I'll be back in 2026 to keep you updated on your daily commute, right here on 936 ABC Radio Hobart.
It's the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Well, the countdown is on for the Taste of Summer Food and Drink Festival to return for another year to the waterfront in Hobart. One of the familiar faces among stallholders will be Tung Yang, who runs a Taiwanese squid stall with her team. Our reporter Meg Whitfield pulled her aside for a chat while she was setting up about how she and husband incorporate produce grown on their farm at Brim Creek and why she's passionate about local ingredients.
We have been serving food in Taste of Summer for about 6-7 years now, apart from during the COVID. And we are doing only one dish, is the charcoal barbecue squid on the skewer, which is very loved by lots of locals and interstate tourism.
And you were mentioning before that your husband is a farmer and you actually use some of the ingredients you grow in this dish. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'll use garlic that we grow our own farm organically, and also a bit of the chili in the sauce that we braise on the charcoal barbecue squid as we're cooking.
Why is it important to you to use the freshest of ingredients in this way, and also you use only Tasmanian seafood? Why is that important to you?
It's really, for me, it's really important to use the local ingredient because we live local. I've always really liked to reconnect people back to the land, which is things grows on this land, in this climate, in the right season. So it's really important to me to use only Tasmanian ingredients. And Tasmania is very famous of premium quality seafood. So it's amazing that I can actually combine this classic Taiwanese night market dish with great quality Tasmanian seafood and present it to the local people. It's a completely different way of cooking, different flavor from the regular way that a restaurant or cafe would cook squid. And it's also great to present quality Tasmanian seafood to the interstate tourism.
Can you talk to me a little bit about this dish and how it compares to if you were at a night market in Taiwan eating it from there?
So we are doing this dish exactly the same way as you would see if you ever visited a Taiwanese night market. So we cook it with charcoal instead of gas barbecue heat, and also we have the squid on the skewer instead of chapatisha in a plate. So we pass people this dish on the skewer and they will be eating this charcoal barbecue squid on the skewer just as they were visiting Taiwan and wandering around in the night market.
Now, you've mentioned that you've worked at this festival for quite a few years now. Can you paint me a picture of just how much work goes into preparing for something like this? I can see you've got notes of things to remember on your arm at the moment.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, certainly. So we have to make the whole structure and also prepare for all kind of weather, rainy day or extremely hot sunny day. We don't want to get ran out and we don't want to be sunburned as well. So we actually made the like a solid timber barbecue shelter to screw it on our stove. And to have this happen, it's not just needing a bit of carpentry skill, but also we have to communicate with the event organizer and tell them exactly the size of our infrastructure and what needed to get down. We need to bolt it in the concrete floor for the wind risk, because it's Tasmania. It can be really windy, and all the structure need to be comply with the building regulation to make sure the safety of us, our staff, and all the patrons.
And your farm is based in Bream Creek. Are you making the trip back there every night after this, or do you have somewhere prepared to stay in Hobart?
We are actually lucky enough. My husband's sister live in town in Glenorchy. So during the event, we just stay in Glenorchy instead of driving back to Bream Creek, because the festival hour is about 11 hours a day, but we are here like 3 or 4 hours ahead and then leaving at least an hour after the event finish.
Sounds like you'll need to be eating a lot of squid to sustain you during that time.
Yeah, for sure. We have plenty.
Yeah, that was Tong Yang ending that report amidst busy preparations for the Taste of Summer Festival. Talking there to Meg Whitfield about her farm at Bream Creek as well. Still to come on the Country Hour today, coming up, we'll have preparing strawberries and scallops for the taste and the historic location for a whiskey distillery at Battery Point. First up, the news headlines with Scout Wallen.
Making news this afternoon, a Tasmanian man who scammed farmers with promises of hay during a drought has been sentenced to 1 year in prison with a 6-month non-parole period. Among other charges, Robert Donald Blackberry pleaded guilty to 15 counts of dishonestly acquiring a financial advantage. During sentencing yesterday, the Launceston Magistrates Court heard the 32-year-old had told sustained blatant lies, mostly between July 2021 and May 2025. They included receiving multiple payments for hay never delivered and lying about why it wasn't. A 14-year-old girl remains in hospital in a serious but stable condition after suffering a serious head injury following an e-scooter incident in Tasmania's south. Police and emergency services were called to Risdon Vale last night, where a provisional licensed driver and an e-scooter had crashed. The 18-year-old driver was uninjured and is assisting police with their inquiries. And briefly overseas, a member of Greenland's parliament says it's time for the territory to stand on its own. US President Donald Trump has restated his desire to make the Danish territory part of the US and has appointed a special envoy to Greenland. Mr. Trump says his country has to have the Arctic island for national security reasons, with both Denmark and Greenland rejecting the claim. There'll be more news in about half an hour.
You're amazing, Tasmania. The ABC Giving Tree has broken all records. You've raised more than $390,000 for Tasmanians in need this Christmas. From all of us at ABC Radio Hobart.
Coast to coast, this is the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And just letting you know, there'll be no Country Hour tomorrow, Christmas Day, and as well Boxing Day. Boxing Day busy because of the cricket, and also the Sydney to Hobart yacht race, which gets underway on Boxing Day as well. But we will be back next Monday as per normal and going right through to the new year. So it's getting very closer to 2026, isn't it? Well, strawberries and scallops keep one stall holder at the Taste very busy, and this year's event will be no exception. Not content to just manage one stall at the Taste, there are two stalls, as reporter Meg Whitfield found out.
My name is Sabina Newton and we are down here at the Taste of Summer getting set up for the festival.
So talk to me a little bit about your two stalls that you have here this year and why the Taste of Summer is such an important event for your business.
Yeah, so I grew up in beautiful Tasmania, particularly on the East Coast, but spent my time between Hobart and Coles Bay. So I guess having my two stalls, one of which being Straubs and Cream and the other one being Bass Strait Scallops, is like a real celebration of kind of my childhood and growing up around such amazing produce. So I'm excited to share that with our tourists and also the locals alike.
We'll start with berries. Where do they all come from and how are they looking this year?
Yeah, so all of our strawberries are sourced by Hill Street from around Tasmania, primarily in the northwest, but they are looking delicious. They're above and beyond like a normal kind of supermarket strawberry. They're super delicious and we cover them in chocolate or with cream as well in outside in the atrium.
Seafood is obviously a big staple for a lot of people around this time of year. How are the scallops looking? What kind of size are we talking?
Yeah, so the scallop season has been a little bit slow this year, so we're actually lucky to get our hands on a few hundred kilos that we'll go through for this event. The scallops are looking good, though. As usual, we don't do anything complicated to them, crumbed or grilled in at Bass Strait Scallops.
What is it about the taste of summer that is important for you to be a part of?
I think the best thing about the taste of summer is not only like the camaraderie between the stallholders, but it is a real celebration of the end of the year and I think a time where Tasmanian produce is at its finest. You've got berries from, you know, all around the state, seafood, the best drinks as well. So it's a real time to kind of celebrate, but it's also, as a stallholder, it's amazing to be part of the community of all the stallholders.
What does that actually mean for you as someone who works in hospitality and works in the food industry to actually meet other stallholders and see what other producers are doing?
Yeah, it's super inspiring to see how other stallholders have kind of turned some of Tasmania's great produce into a product that can be enjoyed by the locals. And definitely throughout the festival, I go on to try a different one every single day or a different few every single day. So I make my way around all of the stalls by the end of it if I get time. But definitely everyone's very supportive down here and really looking to kind of offer every customer something really different.
How much preparation has gone into getting to this festival, let alone actually setting up your stall now?
Yeah, there's a lot of preparation that goes into kind of setting up your stall. I think the hardest thing is you don't know how many people are going to come through the doors. Normally it's super, super busy down here and we're expecting the same thing this year. But I've been cleaning 2,000 scallop shells. So I've been smelling and I've been scrubbing for hours and hours. So there's definitely a lot of hard work that goes in, not just us as stall holders, but also our wonderful suppliers and producers as well.
Why do you think there is such a pull towards seafood and Tasmanian produce this time of year?
I think there's such a pull towards seafood just because, you know, it's nice and summery. People are down here visiting. You're watching the Sydney to Hobart come in and it's really like it's the best that our state produces. So it's the best time to try seafood down here. It's fresh, straight out of the water.
How many Taste of Summers have you been involved with?
This is now my third year doing, the Taste of Summer.
Have there been any major learnings from previous events that you're hoping to put into action this time?
There's been definitely a lot of learnings. I think you've got to prep more than you ever think you're going to need to. I think the first day I ever did it back 3 years ago, we ended up tripling our volume in the first day. So I've learned to prepare. Expect people to be really hungry.
And in terms of the strawberry, so you mentioned a few hundred kilos of scallops. What about the scale of strawberries are we talking?
Yeah, so last year we were going through at least 600 punnets a day. So we have a whole team of our strawberry cutters every single morning, our dream team cutting all the tops off the strawberries. So we have them going for 3-4 hours every single morning. Hope to do the same as well this year.
And are there any stalls that you will be definitely checking out while you're here?
I'll definitely be checking out lots of the stalls. I think Lily Chuetha's katsu buns she did a similar thing at Winterfeast, however in like a sandwich format. So I'm keen to try those again. Ate far too many of those at the Winterfeast. And then there's lots of amazing wines and things, but I'll probably have to steer away from those as I'm working, which is a bit disappointing.
And coming into Christmas, I imagine you will have a lot of seafood on your own Christmas Day menu. What's that going to look like? And what's that looked like just for you overall preparing for Christmas?
Yeah, so, I mean, the rock lobster licensing has just opened up for the year, so our family does a lot of crayfishing, so we'll probably have lots of beautiful rock lobsters, as we call crayfish, on the table, but otherwise kind of keeping everything pretty simple and definitely not eating any scallops, because I will be well and truly sick of those by the time the Taste finishes.
Sabine Newton getting set for Christmas, and then a busy period with the two stalls at the Taste, talking strawberries and scallops there with Meg Whitfield. Tip Rat in the text line says, "Hi Tony, how are your broad beans and tomatoes growing? And don't tell lies, I don't tell lies. Merry Christmas to you and your family, Tip Rat." Yeah, I didn't have too many broad beans this year, but I picked the last of them this morning, actually. Tomatoes are growing well, I must admit. I do the field tomatoes if I can. And I think I've got about half a dozen little tomatoes there already. So I just need a bit more heat to keep them going. Anyway, yeah, happy Christmas to your family as well. Now, whiskey distillers are popping up in different areas right across the state. And this inner city distillery in Hobart is in a building with lots of history, as Sophie Jaggers found out.
I was working as a brewer beforehand. And then one thing led to another. I reached out to Jack Lark, who was our pioneer distiller back in 2020. And here I am today.
And tell me a bit about Battery Point Distillery. How did that one start up?
Yeah, so we're a boutique distillery in the back of the historic Lenner Hotel in Battery Point. What was once a hobby to service the hotel rooms for our gin led into single malt whiskey making. Jack, with that Lark last name, selling whiskey was going to be eventuated from there. So, yeah. I first started with Jack. We were together for about three months. Then he went to London for musical theatre and I took over from there.
And it's got quite a history, your distillery. Tell me a bit about the building.
It does. So where we're located, the building was built in 1874 by Captain James Bailey, and he was a whale merchant and a shipbuilder, biggest in the Southern Hemisphere back in the 1800s. Where we currently stand in our distillery, we should be the artillery room. So the cannonballs for the boats used to be pushed downstairs underneath the distillery in a tunnel straight to the boats. Yeah, I love the history about that. Just the diversity of where we currently are. Other distilleries around Tassie are so unique, you know, on the rivers or lakes, fields of barley, industrial estates, and here we are in the historic Battery Point.
And where is your barley sourced from?
So we get it from Bort Malt up in Devonport. So a lot of Tasmanian producers get the barley from around that area as well. So we use 100% Tasmanian grown barley.
And talk me through the research process when the distillery was founded. Did you go overseas or seek research elsewhere?
Yeah, so every distillery has a story involved with Bill Larker somehow. So our story began in a fishing trip, actually, in 2017. So Lloyd Clark, who owns the hotel, he was on a fishing trip with Bill Lark up in Bothwell, up in the Highlands, and Bill simply was asked a question from Lloyd, how big do you need to be able to make single malt whiskey? And was shown at the time, a storage shed for the hotel suppliers, like packets of chips and beer and whatnot, and wine boxes. And we were shown, yeah, the space would be enough to fit a still in there. And we bought one, then we bought two, and then we started to make whiskey and gin. So that's the history of how we started, really, just a chat over a fishing session.
Whiskey distilleries have really boomed in the last decade or so. What's your point of difference?
Of course. So I think our point of difference is that we're in a historic hotel as well. So we get a lot of traffic coming through from guests travelling all over the world. We're spending months in beautiful housing as well. We're next to a beautiful park, different cask selection, breaking some casks down and filling them up with different types of wood. So one stave might be different than the other stave. The head might can be completely different to the stave as well. So at the moment we're working on a cask that's got about four different types of wood into that cask itself, which is quite cool. And the outcome of that is really showing some unique flavours and profiles currently, which is pretty cool. I'm also a big advocate that there is whiskey out there for everybody. So I like to bring the youth to drink whiskey. Yes, I know it's expensive, but I do believe that people do that. So we've done a Maduri cask this year. Maduri being that green liqueur, it's quite cool. It doesn't look like a beautiful, rich history kind of traditional whiskey, but it tastes bloody superb. We do it the traditional way as well. We only use the one still for our whiskey. Yeah, everything's naturally done here on site.
And tell me about that still. Where's it from?
So it was built in 2017 by a gentleman called Peter Bailey from Napalua. He's now retired now, but it's a Tasmanian built, 100% Tasmanian still.
What have sales been like? And, you know, whiskey's a bit of a luxury good. Are you still finding, you know, with cost of living and everything, that sales are yeah, remaining consistent?
They're consistent enough, I think. There obviously is the issue of not being able to sell as much as what we were previously. I think excise has a lot to do with that as well. The economy, where people are at the moment, they're not reaching out that often to buy whiskey. Yeah, it's a hard question to answer, to be honest, but definitely we're just going to keep our head down, our bum up, and just do as much of what we possibly can. And what separates us from the mainland is that the people involved with here, we want to see it succeed. So we're all here to help each other. We all basically use the same still, or thereabouts. There's a couple other still makers down here now that are doing the same thing. But if we get any trouble, every single person, I can't name anyone that can't, will reach out and give you a hand. Like, that's the best thing about what we do, is that we have a problem with our still, we reach out, we need some advice, we just ring up and ask. A text message, a phone call, go and see them face to face. It's the best thing.
Yeah, Luke Lawrence, head distiller at the Battery Point Distillery, chatting there to Sophie Jaggers. Now, prawns, peel your own or pre-peel when it comes to prawns? What's your preference? Apparently the answer to that question can vary much depending on what generation you are. The Marine Stewardship Council, at least, has been doing some research into our prawn consumption habits. Dr. Adrian Gutteridge from the council says it shows convenience is proving more important than price or sustainability.
We asked Aussies that question and, yeah, estimating about 18 million kilos of prawns eating over Christmas, you know, which is a fairly substantial proportion of Australia's, you know, annual consumption. So, yeah, a lot of prawns. And, yeah, some of the other questions we asked them were around their sort of purchasing preferences, and there was a couple of interesting things. I guess first is that, you know, 60% of Aussies will prefer to buy, you know, pre-peeled prawns so they don't have to do it themselves. Which is something that, you know, my household, I grew up in a place where, you know, you peel your prawns and that's the ones you eat. So the more you peel, the more you eat. But yeah, from Marine Stewardship Council's perspective, one of the other interesting findings was that even though, you know, 60% of people are looking for pre-peeled prawns, only about 16% are actually bringing sustainability into their sort of purchasing sphere when they're going to buy prawns. And, you know, from our perspective, we'd love to see that get higher, because at the moment there's about 2/3 of wild caught prawns in Australia that carry the MSC blue fish tick label. So it's kind of never been easier to buy sustainable prawns. So that's what we're really kind of pushing this year for people to do.
So, yeah, so when people go into the supermarket or the fish market or wherever they're buying their prawns from, whether it's frozen or fresh, there are, as you say, there are a number, a decent number that have that certification that people could be choosing from.
Yeah, that's right. And you can do that in your local supermarket or your fishmonger. And, you know, for people out there, a thing to remember is your most powerful conservation tool is your wallet. And so the purchasing power you have really sends messages to, you know, fisheries and organisations and companies about what you're actually wanting out of those products. And, yeah, for people, we're just saying, you know, the blue fish tick MSC logo is a really easy way to identify that prawn or seafood product, whatever it is, comes from a sustainable fishery. And that is, you know, the number one thing we're asking Aussies to do this year when it comes to buying prawns.
So I'm looking at that tick, that label on a fish product or prawns or whatever it is. Yep. Essentially, what does that mean? What is that telling me as a consumer? What's it guaranteeing me?
Well, it's guaranteeing you that fishery has gone through a really rigorous process to demonstrate sustainability. So the MSC is a third-party independent certification scheme. And to carry that blue fish tick label, that fishery needs to demonstrate three key things. The first is that the target species, the thing that's carrying that blue fish tick, is in a sustainable manner and it's been demonstrated to stay there this generation and generations to come. The second thing is that the impacts of the wider ecosystem are low, such that it's not going to drive potentially bycatch species, for example, into oblivion. And the third is that they've got really strong management in place to give you all that kind of information. So the MSC is sort of the most rigorous independent sustainability certification in the world. So it really is, you know, a really high bar for sustainability and the kind of things that people can be, you know, certain that they're buying from a really well-managed fishery and a fishery that's doing the right thing to kind of ensure that resource is here, not for this Christmas, but also, you know, all Christmases to come.
it's interesting looking at some of these purchasing trends, and you might think, well, is it a cost thing? Because of a cost of living crisis, people are still buying prawns, but maybe they're looking for the slightly cheaper option. So they might be some of your more imported varieties, or maybe they're ones that, you know, for some reason, whatever reason, they're not signed up to this program. Do you think that might be what consumers are looking for first?
Yeah, perhaps. And I mean, I guess contrary to that idea that, you know, the cost of living crisis is making people choose cheaper options, like it's actually more expensive to buy pre-peeled prawns. So, you know, that kind of shows that the convenience of, you know, not having to deal with, I guess, shell and heads once you get home is probably more factoring in that purchasing thing. But, you know, when it comes to imported versus, you know, Australian wild caught prawns, you know, the price difference isn't going to be all that much different, especially at, you know, your kind of bigger supermarkets. And, you know, I guess the thing that would differentiate my purchasing, for example, is knowing that the prawns that are Australian caught, wild caught, carrying the MSC blue fish tick label, you know, that fishery is in our own waters. They're really well managed. It's a, you know, fantastic or super tasty, low mole, so it's kind of better in this as well. And yeah, I guess if that kind of cost of imported prawns is coming into it, the thing I would just ask people to do is just consider where that's come from and what that regulation might be in another country, because, you know, they're unlikely to be in the same kind of realm that Australia's wild caught prawns are.
So the message to consumers heading out to buy their Christmas prawns is, well, whether you prefer to peel your own or take the more convenient option, which I'll put my hand up and say, I actually go for convenience with the family. It's just, you know, one less thing to do. But, you know, look Australian and look for that MSC label is what you're asking people to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, yeah, just on that prawn peeling thing, like, I don't know, the convenience is good, but I'm in I grew up in a fairly competitive family, and so like prawn peeling came into it for sure. So my kind of Christmas memories are like big bowl of prawns in front of you, and you just go ham on it until you can eat as many as you want. And the more you peel, the more you ate. So yeah, it's pretty good for my kind of, you know, Christmas memories. And I'm trying to get my kids to do the same thing, although, you know, they're not massive prawn eaters yet. They're a bit young, but we'll see how we go.
Yeah, been involved in some prawn peeling competitions in my time. Dr. Adrian Gutteridge, Senior Fisheries Standards Manager at the Marine Stewardship Council, speaking with Selena Green about prawns, and plenty of prawns being purchased today, Christmas Eve, for a seafood type Christmas. Well, the Riverina in southern New South Wales has long been known as one of Australia's major food bowls, and with Christmas fast approaching, that reputation was on full display at a local farmer's market. Reporters Cara Jeffrey and Justina Baster went along to the Wagga market to find out more.
This festive season, the Riverina Producers Market is busy as shoppers make their final decisions about what will end up on the Christmas table. For many, it is a balance between cost of living pressures and the desire to buy fresh, locally produced food. Ashley Carrig from Hillview Farms in Batlow says buying direct from growers helps keep prices reasonable while maintaining quality.
So my partner and I own and run Hillview Farms. We own a farm in Batlow and a retail store in Adelong. And we have been at the growers market now for the last 6 weeks, and we grow a range of different things on our farm. We've got pumpkins, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchinis, watermelons, and we work with a lot of other local farms since we've moved down here. So we bought the farm 14 years ago, and then we were always living in Sydney, but we started doing farmers markets in Sydney initially with just what we were growing. That turned into what our neighbours were growing, and then my partner went searching for other farms, like towards Sydney, Gundagai, and then the outskirts of Sydney. And then the markets turned into a website where we do home delivery all over Sydney. COVID hit, the market stopped, our online orders went to 3,000 a week. It was madness. Anyway, April this year, we pulled the pin on Sydney. Our son's 9, and we just wanted to move for us quieter life, and so we moved down to the farm full time and opened the retail store in Adelong in June. Being that we are farm direct, like we're working directly with growers, it's cutting out that middleman, so things aren't extraordinarily expensive, and the quality is just so much better. The taste, like that's why people keep coming back again and again. I mean, it just tastes better.
Ms Carrick says summer fruit has been particularly popular in the lead up to Christmas.
The stone fruit, cherries, peaches, nectarines, the apricots here are selling particularly well.
When it comes to Christmas essentials, she says there is one clear favourite.
Absolutely cherries. The cherries are spectacular. Whether they're from young, Adelong, Batlow, you can't get better.
Batlow apple and cherry grower Greg Mowat says the season has delivered high quality fruit despite dry conditions.
Well, we've only just started picking cherries in the last 10 days. The crop this year is outstanding. It's one of those years where everything's come together. It is a dry year, but generally in dry years we grow better fruit. So this year's coming off. Great crop.
Mr. Mowat says Batlow's climate plays a key role in fruit quality.
It's an ideal growing climate. It's got altitude, it's got cool nights, warm days instead of really hot days like we're getting here in Wagga today. So it's a great climate for growing really high quality fruit.
He says demand has remained strong heading into Christmas.
We tend to sell most of what we grow ourselves, so we're not reliant on the Sydney market. So our demand is always very good. We've been doing it for a long time, and dare I say it, we have a bit of a reputation for growing, you know, some good quality fruit. So we tend to get a lot of return business, and people are looking out for our product.
Mr. Mowat says the Riverina offers a wide range of high quality produce.
Citrus coming out of the out around Leeton and Griffith is always an outstanding product. There's so much really high quality beef and lamb that's grown in this region. It used to be many years ago there were a lot more vegetables produced along the Murrumbidgee River, but not so much anymore. But a lot of olives, there's strawberries growing here in Wagga that are really high quality. I just think it's a great region. It's a very safe region climatically, and I think as a result of that you've got farmers that have been plying their trade for many, many years, and they're doing it very, very well. I think it's very underrated.
At the meat stalls, producers say Christmas favourites like ham are selling fast. Vendor Jason Bates, who farms at Stock and Bingle and also owns a butchery in Cootamundra, explains more.
Our main product we produce is we grow pigs outdoors on pasture, and they're all heritage breed, pasture-aged Hampshire and Berkshire pigs. Then we also grow chickens outdoors on pasture, a bit of grass-fed beef and grass-fed lamb. But our main thing is pork and chicken at the markets here, and it's our first full week or second full week here at the market.
Yeah.
The hams are going pretty good. Can't beat pork. There's chicken over here, and we got a bit of chook as well. There's plenty of good things just in this market, but plenty to find locally.
Mr. Bates says they do not compete with major supermarkets on price.
I guess what we'd say is we don't compete at all, because we're not comparing apples with apples. So everything we do costs us a lot more to produce. There's a lot more labour hours involved, and we've got to look after our people a lot better. That costs money, and to look at an animal every day costs money. So we do that. We don't falter from what we want to do and our beliefs and how we run our animals to try and save a dollar. And our customers will come to us over the big chains because that's what they want as well.
He says transparency matters to customers.
The produce has to be better, but also the story behind it needs to be true the whole way through. And that's why transparency is massive. And like our farm's right on a road, people can come to the farm. People have come to the farm, chefs and other butchers and such. Making sure that the product that is sold here matches what it says on the board or on the label. And then it will taste better and people will come back.
For shoppers, buying local is about quality and trust. Penny Scott from Canoundra, who was visiting Wagga Wagga, says farmers' markets allow direct connection with growers.
I can look the growers in the eye. I can ask all those questions about how the products have been grown, how the piggies might have been raised in the paddock, how the chickens have been plucked. I can get down to that fine detail to know about animal welfare and also the methods and the care that go into raising all these beautiful animal products.
She says supporting farmers means looking beyond price.
Might be pricing, but the quality is nothing like what you can get here. It's not about scale. It's about the care at low volume and higher quality. So there's an economic paradigm in here as well. I'm not about cheap food. I have been a farmer, a small-scale farmer, and to make a living, an equitable living, you actually need to include so many more of the externalities in the pricing of your food than what you ever get in supermarkets, who are just about to make a profit. They don't care what it is. They will just sell what they can to make a profit.
Another shopper, Joanne Wilson from The Rock, says health and longevity matter to her.
I'll go as healthy as I can go with really good quality produce. So I bought fruit and veg from here 2 weeks ago. We're just finishing off and it's still fresh, whereas the supermarket stuff goes off so quickly.
As Christmas approaches, many shoppers say supporting local farmers is worth it. Penny Scott says it comes down to values.
If we want to support farmers, we avoid the supermarket system. We come to farmers' markets. We can buy online. We can support the smaller independent supermarkets who seem to have a little more flavour and taste about what they will have in their supermarkets. It's not about volume, it's about quality.
Yeah, Penny Scott from Canoundra, ending that report from Cara Jeffrey with additional reporting from Justina Basta. Enjoy your Christmas. No country hour tomorrow or Friday, but we will be back on Monday. Talk then.